Hello, and welcome to the IDEMS podcast. I'm Lily Clements, a data scientist, and I'm here with David Stern, a founding director of IDEMS. Hi, David.
Hi, Lily. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm in Kenya at the moment, so I'm sorry if there's any issues with the audio.
Yes, no worries. I'm actually in Italy, so this is an interesting episode where neither of us are in our home setup.
Great. And I thought today we could continue on this RMS series. It's the 20th year anniversary of research method support. So there's been a whole range of episodes between you and Lucy and a couple between me and you, not as many as we would like, and I'm sure that we'll get more. But was thinking we could continue on that series.
Absolutely. I guess there's a few different topics we could touch on, but one which I'd love to talk about is really interactions.
Great. Yes. Okay. Interactions are always a fun one to discuss. They always sound more complicated than they are.
Absolutely. It's one of those things that when you actually come across real examples of this, they're so obvious. And yet, quite often, we forget about them. We forget about them in research. We forget about them in research design, even. We make assumptions where we assume that because we found one thing in one case, it'll hold in another.
Sure. So maybe we should start by briefly explaining what interactions are.
Absolutely. Do you want to give that a go?
I'll give it a go. I'll try and say it as simply as I can, because it's one of those ones where if you could just see it so easily with a nice image, but sometimes not as easily by words. Let's see. So it's basically, let's say that you are looking at an effect. You're looking at, let's say, boys and girls on treatment A and treatment B. And it's where you might find how treatment A affects boys is different to how it affects girls relative to treatment B. That's not very well explained, is it?
No, but it's a really good use case. And just to put this in perspective, this was a very serious case about heart attacks, where a lot of the research on heart attacks was done on men. And a lot of the symptoms that were identified and put forward were related to research done on men. And as more research came out, it found that actually women had different symptoms and they reacted differently to treatment and to different treatments. So the example you've given is one which is very real, and we've given this in the health context, but it's also one where I have some beautiful examples from West Africa where this was rammed home to me in the work that was done by partners in the field.
Nice. Okay, so what's your West Africa example?
So the one that sticks in my mind comes from a field visit. I loved the few years where I was able to go out with the rest of the regional team and visit the different projects and see what was happening in the field. And a lot of what we were doing was going to visit farmers' fields. But every now and then we did research, well, we had partners that were doing research on agricultural research stations. And this visit was to an agricultural research station. And one of our partners was doing some research on varieties of, I think it was sorghum and cowpea, and also what you call association of how you plant them together. And there were two different ways of planting together. You can either plant them in rows, where you have rows of sorghum and then rows of cowpea. And there are lots of different ways you can do that. You can have two rows of sorghum, two rows of cowpea, loads of ways. But often in research centers, that's what you do. You do things in rows. And the farmers' fields, actually what they'd observed when they were working with farmers is that the farmers often planted the sorghum and the cowpea in the same pocket. So you actually dig a hole and you put both the sorghum and the cowpea seeds in the same hole.
Interesting.
And that's another way of planting them together. And this is, in some sense, quite efficient because you're making less holes, or every hole you're putting in both sorghum and cowpea. But then you have competition between the sorghum and the cowpea for light, for growth, for the nutrients, because they're competing with one another.
Sure. But just a small question so that I can understand. Why not put, say, two sorghum in a pocket?
Those would be competing with each other. Now, that's not to say that people don't. Actually, I don't know enough whether it's sorghum or millet or others, but sometimes people would put multiple plants of the same type together and you get a small cluster of plants. So that would sometimes happen as well.
Okay, I see. This is just for this specific example.
In this particular trial, they had a beautiful square where they had essentially two farmers' varieties, one of sorghum and one of cowpea, and two researcher varieties. These were what they would call the improved varieties that researchers had been breeding of sorghum and cowpea. And we arrived to see this square, which had four plots, a 2x2, where you had two different planting mechanisms and two different types of variety, which were planted in the two different ways. And it was the most obvious interactions I have ever seen, because two of these plots were just beautiful. The sorghum was doing well, the cowpea was doing well, they were covering the ground nicely in different ways, and they just looked healthy and were growing well. And two of the plots were basically bare. The sorghum wasn't happy, the cowpea wasn't happy, nothing was growing well, and you could see it. Even I, as a non-expert, could see these two plots are happy, these two plots are sad.
I see. So this isn't even at the analysis point. This is by visually seeing in front of your eyes the plot.
In my eyes, looking at the plot, this is a qualitative assessment by an ignoramus, because I know nothing about agriculture really. I'm learning it as I'm going. I am not an expert in this, but even I could tell these two are happy, these two are sad.
Yeah.
And I think you can guess which ones were happy. The farmer varieties, planted as the farmers normally do them in the same hole, they were working symbiotically with one another and they were very happy. And actually, this variety of cowpea was a crawling one. So it didn't go up, it went across and it filled in the ground. And so the ground was full of the leaves of the cowpea as it spread over and covered the ground. And your sorghum went straight up. So they weren't competing with one another. They were symbiotically filling the spaces, one going vertically, the other going horizontally. And they were growing very nicely together. The researchers' varieties, both of them went up. The cowpea went up and the sorghum went up. And they'd grown at different times. And so they'd both grown nicely independently. And neither totally shaded the other. They'd grown in their lines very nicely, and they were both doing well. When you put the sorghum and the cowpea from the farmer's varieties and you separated them into lines, they didn't grow as well. And I don't fully understand this, but I believe it's because actually the sorghum fixes nitrogen, which was therefore in the wrong place. No, so the cowpea fixes the nitrogen, which was in the wrong place for the sorghum or whatever it is. So those varieties, neither of them was growing as well as the other, as in the other plot, because they actually symbiotic in the way they grew together with one another. And similarly, when you put the sorghum and the cowpea from the researcher varieties, they weren't used to competing with each other for water and so on. And so neither of them were happy either. They didn't grow well together because they hadn't been adapted to that. They hadn't been selected for that. And so it was a beautiful example of breeding in action, where the farmer's selection had been over the years for the varieties that grew well together. Whereas in the researcher case, the selection had been for varieties that grew well on their own, because almost no researcher breeding happens in association. This is actually something I've learned over the years. That although a lot of farmers grow in association, almost all breeding in research organizations happens in pure fields where you just have sorghum or you just have cowpea. And so they work quite well in an association then, which is by lines, because that's sort of more similar and there can be symbiosis which remains there, but they're not used to being bred in association. So it absolutely made sense. But it was just so obvious and it was beautiful. And it was a real reminder that we need to understand what we're selecting for and what people are actually going to grow in their fields and how they're going to grow it in their fields. What are their practices?
Yeah, very interesting. I really like that it could be physically seen. So then did the farmers have an idea? Did the farmers already have that kind of hypothesis of what the issue was without even necessarily needing to know terms like interactions?
Well, what was so nice about this, of course, is this research had emerged by the researchers in the local research organization being challenged by farmers when they tried to go and tell them to plant in lines. And the farmer said, no, we don't plant in lines. We plant in the same pocket. And this is why. And so this was actually the researchers playing catch up with the farmers.
Oh, fun.
So in that particular visit, we were there with the researchers. And the researchers were now indeed showing what they had known, which is that part of the problem with some of their varieties that they were trying to share with farmers was that the varieties that they were trying to share were being planted in ways they weren't selected for, they weren't bred for. And so when they were going and telling farmers to plant in lines, the farmers were saying, we don't want to plant in lines. We have this approach that we like to plant. And so what's actually happened, this was a number of years ago, and so this has actually changed some of the breeding programs about what people are trying to breed and how they're trying to breed it and the new varieties they're trying to breed for. It's really, really interesting work and very sobering to be reminded that as researchers, if our simple goal is to try and breed to increase yield in a particular context, we may be missing the point and we may not be creating the varieties which farmers actually want. There are a number of reasons why if you grow things, actually there were other parts of the country where farmers would grow three different crops in the same pocket. And this was something again, which just totally threw researchers, how can you do that? But the point was that the varieties that they were using were working symbiotically with each other, fixing different things, actually covering the space differently, using the height differently, growing at different times so that they weren't competing too much. Really interesting, fascinating work.
Yeah, I enjoy these sort of things. I don't know it in agriculture as such, but theoretically in completely controlled conditions, okay, if you take the pill at bang on the correct time each day in, say, medical, or if you really do things by the book, then this is the best option and this is the way to do it. But actually, in reality, there is that human effect of we don't do it that way and humans forget to take the pill or humans forget to put exactly the same amount of water on all plots. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And there's so much, being able to adapt for the variability is so important. And that question of what's the research serving? What's it trying to create is a really interesting one. And do you want farmers to adapt to the practices that researchers have built for? Or do we want our researchers to actually be more adaptive in what they're actually researching and what they're breeding for? Really, really fascinating questions. And it's one of the reasons I've so enjoyed working within this context, because these questions come to a front so often. And historically, a lot of agriculture has adapted to what the researchers say. Whereas in the West African context, the smallholder farmers, they're such experts, they're such masters of their trade. Often the researchers' way is not improving what they're doing, which is why it doesn't get taken up more widely. This example of where you're growing things together in the same pocket, in the same hole, that can be, if you have the right varieties, if you've actually built for this, this can be extremely valuable. You're actually using the symbiosis between these plants in ways which are being lost when you simplify down and you just focus on one thing. And in these difficult environments, when you're really in the Sahelian context, this is something where you need these advantages. You can get better drought resistance because your plants are actually supporting one another. One's providing shade for the other when it needs to, and so on. So it can be so beneficial. And yet we lose a lot of that sometimes in our research-led approaches. So fascinating work and a beautiful example of interactions at play where it really is this extreme case. The interaction is strong enough that the two opposite things do well. And when you now combine them in another way, they don't work. It's just beautiful.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you. I enjoy these discussions and I look forward to discussing other topics in our next episode.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks.